You're listening to Red Nation Online.
Now we can make that difference. A lot of great
around. This is the Gaffer and Hooligan Podcast. Discussions, debates, and opinions on Major League Soccer and the CONCACAF region from a Canadian perspective. Hosted by Kamal Hilton.
Hello everyone and welcome to the Gaffer and Hooligan, available on Red Nation Online, War Room Sports Podcast Network, and FastRadio.com. I'm your host, Kamal Hilton, joined by my co-host, Aaron Nielsen. How's it going, Aaron?
Good, Kamal.
And this week, we wanted to kind of change things up and talk about a different league. We talk a lot about MLS, we talk a lot about issues within the league and even surrounding the league, but not directly involving the league or Harvard, if that makes sense to you. If you've heard us talk before, you know what I'm talking about.
I don't think this is surreal. I think this is our normal.
But in this podcast, we wanted to talk about USL Pro. They just had their championship final, and just to give an overview of what we're going to talk about, we'll talk about the final to start off. We also want to talk about some sights and sounds from surrounding the game itself and just the league in general, and just talk about things because we don't normally get to, well, at least I don't normally get to watch it a lot. You probably watch more than I do of it, so we can talk about that, get your perspective on things. You also put out a prospects handbook similarly to the MLS draft handbook that you put out in the last pod, talking about the 25 players that are under MLS Academy contract, whatever you want to call it, and they've been essentially loaned out to some teams, and you have the 25 players that are not part of that thing that are USL contracted that are the top 25, I guess, to watch. And then the second half, we have some other issues we'll get into. We'll kind of reveal those.
Yeah, I think they'll be brought up when we talk about generally about USL Pro, but and I think they're interesting to the further development of USL Pro and also its relationship to the MLS in the future.
Yeah, so to start off, let's talk about the final a little bit.
Okay.
One of the things that I want to bring up is you actually informed me that it was going on when you emailed me, and you told me that it was going to be on YouTube, which I didn't know about. I didn't know that they would put a game, like a final, on YouTube.
That's well, in general, you know, and not to be disparaging of USL Pro, but, you know, the league, admittedly, is a sort of minor league kind of thing, so it'd be a similar of development basketball league in the NBA or AAA baseball and baseball. And because the arguably the MLS could partnership with USL Pro and have the game as part of their MLS package on the MLS Live package. But the interesting thing, and one of the reasons why I got a chance to watch a lot of games this year, is that USL Pro put every single game this season on YouTube. So you can actually go back now and watch everything if you have hours to kill, or days to kill, or months to kill. I think the idea of YouTube, you know, there's been talk about YouTube and Yahoo bidding for Olympics and other sporting events in the future. I know you watched the World Basketball Championship recently, and, you know, it was okay. You know, American games were on, but some of the games weren't covered properly and stuff like that. So I think the opportunity, and I watched the YouTube stream live, and it was pretty good. It was as good. Well, it's the same stream as the YouTube save. I've been very impressed by their multimedia package this year.
So in the final, Sacramento Republic beat Harrisburg City Islanders 2-0.
Yeah.
Interesting thing for TFC fans, Sacramento Republic is coached by Preki.
Yeah.
So, and I know some TFC fans, and I guess certainly media, didn't really like him. He comes off as abrasive, and and just cocky. But these Sacramento players seem to love him. They did a halftime piece on him. And I guess the overall atmosphere of building soccer in Sacramento. And they are raving about him. Now, I don't think they would do a piece saying, with the players saying, oh, he's a jerk and I never want to play for him and he's horrible. But there's got to be some semblance of truth to what they're saying. Like, even though he's demanding, that's kind of how their team is built.
Yeah, well, we'll go. And I think we'll bring some of up this in the second half. But it's interesting because Eric Ronaldo, who also has a similar reputation to that and hasn't been given an opportunity in MLS, had similar success last year with Atlanta in the in NASL, and both of them are California-based. And, you know, it's a true argument, and it's something that I've certainly written about, and I think we mentioned on the podcast once or twice, is that there's especially a Hispanic in California. There's a large Hispanic community in California who are good quality soccer players who are not being given the proper look by MLS clubs. So, you know, one of the things that Sacramento did is, you know, they built a very good structured team, but one of the things they did is they took advantage of that and got a lot of the GM for the team, Smith, he was he used to run Ventura County, which was a PDL club. And it was, and the PDL club has less sort of, it's more local than national scouting. So they had a lot of young Mexican players, American and Mexican players, who Sacramento actually brought in this season. You know, just your reference to Toronto C, now he looks a bit more like he's starring in Breaking Bad now, but Justin Braun is on the team as well. And, you know, and he played very well throughout the season, so he's another ex-Toronto C guy.
Yeah, and even if you look at the team they beat, Harrisburg City Islanders, they're affiliated with the Philadelphia Union.
Yeah.
And they had a lot of guys that people would be familiar with, particularly Antoine Hopinot.
Yeah.
Seemed to be play really well in the game. I don't think he didn't get
he
a chance.
Hurt.
To score.
He got hurt, so that's where he had he got
yeah,
subbed out.
He was playing, and I think before he got hurt, he was playing pretty well.
Yeah, I know. Harrisburg has always had a very good relationship with the Union, even before this sort of affiliation. And within my prospect handbook, there's players like McLaughlin. One of the players I would have liked to see was Pedro Romero, who actually started the season in Harrisburg, but played well enough that he's now a regular on the bench for Philadelphia, so he didn't get a chance to play in this game. And I think his size would have changed and the game a bit and prevented some of Sacramento's speed, which was one of the key factors in the game. I thought it was exciting game.
But the overall takeaway that I got from the game is just the appetite for soccer in the Sacramento market and just how many fans came out to that field. They sold it out.
Yeah.
And
I must say, it's hard being an ultra when you're sponsored by a children's hospital, but... But they had a great crowd. It reminded me a lot of when Toronto FC first started their team. You know, that sort of, just incredible enthusiasm. And it's interesting because this game was played at, I guess, their main stadium. But their main stadium only fits about 8,000 people. And earlier in the season, they played in the Sacramento State University's football stadium, which has a crowd of fits about 20,000 people. And they sold that out as well. So it's interesting. I know they play on turf, and we've already started the college football season, so that's probably why this game was held at the smaller stadium. But arguably, if they even played at 30,000-40,000 seat stadium, that game would probably have been sold out, which says a lot about Sacramento, and it says also a lot about the league, and as you said, the desire for soccer.
Yeah, and then overall, they've made their intentions clear that they're aiming for Major League Soccer, and which would bring an interesting dynamic because you have LA Galaxy, you have San Jose Earthquake, you would have Sacramento, and you have whatever Chivas USA is going to morph into. And where are they going? Like, it's just weird. Like, where are they going to go? Chivas, I mean.
Yeah.
And, like, you like it is kind of a weird parallel to the NBA, where the NBA has four similar markets in Sacramento Kings, which are have diehard basketball fans.
Well, it's interesting because the mayor of Sacramento is Johnson, who used to former, and he was having fun on the sideline and after the game as mayor of Sacramento and accepting the awards and the praise by the fan base. But it was interesting to see him because I had at the time I had no reference that he was mayor. But I knew him well as a basketball player, so it was, you know, and he'd smile and he was all having a good time. So
I think he might even help push the
He's very, very supportive in that.
Then you have San Jose Earthquake, who would be the Golden State Warriors Bay Area team. That's another diehard market, I think. Then you have Clippers and Lakers, which would be your LA Galaxy, Chivas USA, or whatever they're going to be called.
Yeah.
But the advantage that the NBA teams have is they're in downtown LA. These two MLS teams are in Carson, California. I don't know. It was just, I think one of those two MLS.
Speak it from a guy from Brampton.
I know. It's weird. A guy from a suburb saying you need to, who hates downtown, saying one of you need to move downtown. But I think for it to work out, one of those two teams need to move downtown.
Yeah, well, I think the other interesting thing, and we talked about this before the pod, is how many teams have this sort of successful package of NBA in the winter and soccer in the summer, right? And we have Portland, we have Real Salt Lake, we have Orlando, who's a new expansion team going into MLS next season. And it seems these sort of, you know, I don't want to be disparaging, but these sort of mid, you know, not your New York, not your LA, these sort of middle-sized large cities in the States, seem to have this capacity of playing, you know, if they don't have a Major League Baseball team and they don't have a NFL team, they seem to be very supportive of soccer as well as their domestic team. And that's interesting because we've had the success of the Indy 11 in NASL this year. And then next year there's a team, potentially a team in Tucson, a potentially a team in Tulsa, and a team in Louisville coming into USL Pro. And all of those cities would fit the same category. As you know, it gives a chance for these smaller cities to have a professional team within their climate.
I think that's a good place to leave that, but let's talk about your prospects handbook a little bit.
Okay.
So you put together, I guess, 50 players it would be.
Yeah.
25 that are under contract with MLS.
Yeah.
And 25 that aren't.
Yeah, just to give a bit of background, USL Pro has always had, USL Pro, and you might clear some of this up for me, but USL Pro is basically regarded as the third tier of American football, or American soccer, behind NASL and MLS. And traditionally, based on the quality of play, they have loaned in players from the MLS going back 4, 5, 6 years ago. But in the last couple of years, they've created this affiliation with the MLS to almost create a farm team situation, a more similar to the D-League and the NBA or the AHL in hockey than a direct farm team like AAA in baseball. But, you know, in the case of, in the case of Harrisburg, I think there's 7 or 8 Philadelphia Union contracted players who played on their team this season. Vancouver Whitecaps have a relationship with Charleston, another USL Pro team, and they had 8 or 9 players from Vancouver. While on the smaller side, Toronto FC had a relationship with Wilmington, and I think they had 3, 4, 5 players play this year. So, you know, they're using USL Pro as a development league for these MLS players MLS teams still care about, but they don't have enough space on the roster to give them minutes. So again, I think that's great for developing. So I think it's a good deal.
Yeah, I noticed that, especially talking to some of these younger guys, like I talked to Quillen Roberts when he was on the Canadian national team recently about his time with Wilmington, and he said, basically, in not so many words, but he basically put across that it was vital for him because it got him meaningful minutes in a competitive environment, and without that, he would have been stuck behind two keepers that he knows he pretty much wouldn't be able to pass, except for maybe getting playing time against a Tottenham Hotspur in a friendly.
Yeah.
So that's
And even in my list of the 25 MLS players. Now this year is a bit different because Orlando's coming into the MLS. And Orlando was able to sign MLS or ESL Pro players to MLS contracts. So Kevin Molino, Trinidadian international, is my number one prospect on the MLS side. He actually played in ESL Pro a couple of seasons on Orlando. But the other players who have an affiliation to an ESL Pro team, to an MLS team, there's a bit of 50-50 there. There's some guys who are, you know, especially because of the LA Galaxy 2 situation, there's some guys who are very raw, very young, who have never really been given a chance in MLS yet. And then there's others who has still need to prove to their MLS clubs, like Roberts, even though Roberts is quite young. And as you said, this gives them great opportunity to continue to show. Now, one criticism I have based on my analysis looking at the past season is I'm not sure how much attention the MLS clubs give to the USL Pro teams. I referenced in an article Toronto, just because we're, this is a Toronto story, but they had difficulty at center back this year, losing a lot of their center backs and stuff. And Wilmington, players not connected to the Toronto FC team, but Wilmington themselves had two, Furclough and Davidson, two very good center backs playing on their team. And arguably, if Toronto was paying more attention to Wilmington, they would see these center backs play and arguably bring them in on loan or offer them a contract when they're lacking that position on the MLS club. So I don't know how, I know you, LA Galaxy certainly has a close relationship to LA Galaxy too, but I'm still not sure in terms of the other relationships of the teams with the senior teams.
Yeah, for me, putting LA aside because they have their team in there, I think the issue with a scenario like Toronto, where you just said, why wouldn't they brought in one of these central defenders, is that those guys would probably be a fish out of water when they get to MLS, not only in terms of maybe a step up in quality, but also maybe Toronto plays a different style from Wilmington. I have no
idea. Well, and again, I think this, it's good you brought this up, because I think in the second half of our conversation, I think that's going to be a topic of that, the quality and the step up of quality. And are these players, now the interesting thing to that is that the players who I have as USL Pro contract players, not given MLS contracts, are players that if people read me on Red Nation Online would be familiar with, because I wrote about them Red Nation Online for a couple of years. So these are players who continuously show at a USL Pro level to be top class there, yet are still not given chances in the MLS. And so, your point is valid. Are these players good enough to play in the MLS? Do they understand the MLS system? But at the same time, why have USL Pro? Why have this relationship if you're not willing to take those chances?
Some of these names on this, I'm just going over the list as we're talking.
Yeah.
Some of these names are very familiar to me, and I'm not even talking about the ones that are contracted to MLS currently. But for instance, you have.
And it's not just because they're Jamaican?
No. I found one who's American. Bilal Duckett, who plays for Charlotte, who was, I forget if he was drafted or he just signed with New England Revolution.
Yeah, well, he's actually an ex-Whitecaps player.
Oh.
And then last year he was given a contract from USL Pro or NASL to MLS. And he was loaned out to Rochester, I believe, last year. And hasn't really been given. Again, very, in baseball we have this term, there's this terminology called 4A players, which are players who show they're good enough or they're top quality in the minors, but haven't yet proven themselves to be top quality in the majors. And some of these guys, now, one of the things is, and one of the reasons why I produced this prospect book this year, is we do have the expansion draft coming up. And next year, there's two more new teams in the MLS, so there's going to be about 30 or 40 new roster spots. And arguably, these guys would probably, I think I'll do better this year in terms of the amount of guys I have on that list who are in the MLS next year than if I did this list in the future. Because there are guys who, you know, certainly they deserve their chance in terms of, you know, in spring training, or I don't know what they call it, but in preseason, they deserve their chance to try out. I don't know if they're quality enough to play full-time at an MLS club. But again, you know, that's a player, you know, just like we mentioned with Justin Braun, that's a player who was dismissed from an MLS club. Instead of retiring or instead of saying, my football career is over, my soccer career is over, he went to this minor league or lower league and is continuing to try to prove himself he's valuable enough to play in the MLS, which is, you know, a lot of kudos to those guys. But at the same time, you know, MLS should be aware of these guys and try to give them as much benefit of doubt as possible.
Are there any players that you want to point out as, you know, because I see, for example, I remember the article you wrote, or one of them that you wrote, about players that were overlooked.
Yeah, yeah.
And the one name that keeps popping into my head is that Cuevas guy. Cuevas.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Jose Cuevas. Yeah, yeah. Now, he's an interesting story because it's a very interesting story because last year, 2 years ago, you know, he has this great background story where he was basically, you know, it's almost like gold, right? He was working on a fruit picking farm in California. In the meantime, he was playing a bit of soccer. He ended up getting signed by Charleston in the USL Pro a couple years ago. He was the MVP of the playoffs when Charleston won the championship. And he showed it again the season afterwards. Unfortunately, or for some real reason, Charleston did not give him a contract this year. He ended up playing in PDL and was one of the top players in PDL. And so Charleston brought him back with about 10 games to go. And at the time, Charleston was out of a playoff spot. And because of his play, basically put them into a playoff spot. So again, if there's a player who's showing whatever he can to prove that he's good enough, he would certainly identify that. And it's interesting, as you mentioned, that article I wrote, I did not go out of my way to highlight players who I thought deserved chances last year, right? So if a player failed this year, you know, he failed, right? You know, you can only do what you're capable of doing. But again, if you look at, you know, one of the things I do provide in this handbook is the historical statistics of each player. And as you can see throughout their career, that, you know, Chin is another, Chin for, who is Jamaican, who plays for Orlando, is an example of that. He, you know, there's questions about his play. He's more of a guy coming off a bench than a guy who can play the full 90 minutes. But throughout his career, he scored double-digit goals at that level. And you would think this is a guy, you know, who could deserve a shot in the MLS, yet teams have sort of overlooked him.
I think that's a good place to leave it.
Sure.
I mean, there's a bunch of players. You guys can check out the book for yourselves. I didn't want to go through everybody.
Yeah.
But
yeah, and the interesting, just to add with the book, at the back of the book, I put depth charts of every single USL Pro team from last season in terms of their projected lineup. It's not 100% correct. It's more the positions the players play and how they would fit in the lineup, and their last season statistics and career statistics. And basically, the reason I did that is you can evaluate yourself, right? So you can see these players comparable to other players in the league. And it's interesting to see these players, you know, their names. You probably remember them from college or from past MLS seasons. And, you know, it's just interesting to see how they develop.
Yeah. So let us know your thoughts. You can tweet us directly at Kamal Hilton and at BNB Sports. Leave a comment underneath this post on the RNO site. Hop onto the Gaffer and Hooligan Facebook page and find the podcast on the War Room Sports Podcast Network and FatsRadio.com. But let's wrap up the show with segment two, Last Call. And you were telling me a little bit that you, not really issues you had, but just kind of a couple of things that you wanted to discuss.
No, I thought, you know, it references in one of the topics you sort of mentioned in already, but the two questions that I want to bring to the table is, number one is, if you look at the prospect handbook, you'll notice that a lot of players are offensively based players, either wingers, forwards, or attacking midfielders. And it's interesting interesting because you recently, this weekend, you were at the game between Trial and Portland. And in both the case of Trial and Portland, both teams who are not fully, are not great teams, the easiest way to put it, both have elected, especially this season, to bring in foreign offensive help. And almost all of their offensive players on both teams are non-American, you know, or non-Canadian, and they're expecting, you know, these American or foreign players to come in and provide, you know, their goals and stuff like that. And so, just in a general question or a general idea, you know, is there an issue here? Should the league mandate, you know, I know we have DPs and amount of foreign players you can use, but should it be mandated? Should a DP, you know, because what teams are doing is, and we've talked about this in the past, but what teams are doing is they're, again, putting all their money and effort into foreign forward players. And so I'm just worried that a lot of these American players and Canadian players who play in a forward position are being ignored because there's just not spots for them at an MLS level.
I think that might change when you start to see MLS teams put in their own teams within the league. Like, for instance, I don't know, if Portland puts a team...
You mean if they have a USL Pro?
Yeah, if they put their academy team or whatever in USL Pro, they might be more inclined to develop their own American forward or attacking midfielder and play him and give him more time because he's been within their system and all that kind of stuff.
Instead
of signing a guy, and because if they're just going to sign guys, I think they lean towards the foreign guy. I just think that's how soccer is.
Now, because of the position you have, you get to see a lot of these guys firsthand. My question regarding MLS scouting is, you know, I have a player database covering a lot of players in the world, most players in the world. I do prospect lists of each individual country and each individual league I follow, so I know the quality of players like the USL Pro Prospect Book equivalent for those other leagues. And the guys that the MLS traditionally bring in are not the names, you know, are players who failed or players they can get in cheap from other leagues. Right? So, you know, this is a very vague question, and I don't know if we can come up with, you know, it's more, I don't know if we can come up with a direct answer for this, but, you know, this weekend, for example, you saw your Rudy play, you saw Addy play. Did they show you something that traditionally an American player wouldn't show you? Like, could you see quality there that...
Not really. Outstanding quality. I mean, I think an American or a North American forward, given the time under, if it's Portland we're talking about, for instance, given the time under a Caleb Porter, I think he can do the same thing Addy did.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion. Or a Rudy, for that matter. Okay. I think Addy...
Well, it's interesting. It's interesting because... You know, the two games, now I know you watch a lot of European soccer on the weekend, so your head might be a little soccer out. But you did watch the Portland-Toronto game closely, and you watched the Sacramento Harrisburg game. And I would argue that Jan, who is a San Jose player who's now playing on loan in Sacramento, and Addy are the same player, or the same type of player, right? Big, tall, a little slow, meant to cause trouble in the box, and that kind of thing. Do you see, just based, and again, you know, I think it's a bit unfair to say, you know, especially because I'm bringing this up now opposed to prior to each game, but did you see a difference? Like, is there something that you see in these foreign players that we're bringing in that the American players lack?
In terms of those two players, I would agree with you that they're kind of the same type of guy. But if we're talking about foreign players in general, like, I think you could find a quality foreign forward that brings a little more maybe creativity.
Although it's interesting because Portland and Sacramento almost play the same style of play. And it's interesting because Lopez, who is the USL Pro Final MVP. Now, one of the reasons I don't have him in my prospect book is that he's above 30, and he's been playing, you know, he's originally from Mexico, and he's been playing in USL Pro Soccer for a number of years. But he has very similar play style to Valeri, right? Now, I'm not saying Valeri and Lopez are the exact same player, but Lopez, you're paying maybe $70,000, $80,000 a year for him. Or Valeri, you're paying, you know, $1 million, $1.2 million. So arguably, I think, you know, and again, I'm, you know, I wasn't setting you up for my conclusion, but my impression is you're paying for the name, right? You're paying for the story. It's exciting to Portland that they're bringing in this guy who played in France or whatever. They don't know where Addy played. Then bringing up, you know, Chirud or John, who is, you know, a local kid from Stanford. And I think, you know, I think part of this problem is the MLS's problem, right? And it, ironically, and this will segue into my next topic in this section, is I almost think the MLS has too much money, which we would have never said before, right? But if they're wasting it, and I will honestly say I think they're wasting it based on the amount of, you know, the players they bought this season, if they're wasting it on these guys, they feel obligated to play them, there's going to be a whole section of players that are never going to get an opportunity. And my second question is we know the USL Pro's future for an academy and being the sort of development league like a AAA or a farm team, and the NSL is completely independent, but based on the direction MLS is going, especially with the amount of foreign players they're bringing into the team, can there be a competitive league to MLS that takes advantage of all these American players who are not getting an opportunity to play?
I think USL Pro could be that league you're looking at, because I was listening to an interview with the USL Pro commissioner.
Yeah.
Forgive me, I forget his name.
Hurst.
Okay. So, and then the question was brought up to him, you know, with a section of MLS teams putting their academy in USL Pro, plus the teams that are already there, plus the teams that are expanding, you know, it is essentially creating a whole bunch of jobs, and those jobs need to be filled by someone, and I think, you know, the American or North American player would be that fit. And I think, you know, you look at the markets they're expanding to. Austin is getting a team back. That team, the original team, was the team that turned into Orlando City.
Yeah.
And now they're getting a team back. I think, you know, if Houston has any Americans kicking around that they don't see getting a lot of playing time or whatever.
Yeah, Houston has affiliation with Pittsburgh now, but yeah.
Forget Pittsburgh, you don't need to give them to Austin.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then Colorado Springs could partner with Colorado Rapids, and you have...
Yeah, my only concern with the direct relationship is that how much commitment is the MLS team going to give the player playing at USL Pro if he's never going to play in the MLS? Mm. Right? Like, you know, these contracts in the MLS are very, you know, they're not life contracts, right? They're very short, and arguably, because, you know, my criticism in the first half of the podcast that I mentioned, where I don't think the MLS team are keeping close enough eyes on their players in the USL Pro, I don't know, you know, and that was one of the reasons, you know, not that, but one of the reasons I created the prospect book was to enlighten people and to say, hey, do you know the guy McLaughlin who you signed as a homegrown player 4 years ago? Or do you know Jen, the guy you drafted 2 years ago? He still exists and he still plays. Now, my guess is most people who are fans of San Jose and fans of Philadelphia are not watching their loaned out players from a couple years ago. They're concentrating on their current team. Now, it's funny that I mentioned, you know, just by accident, I mentioned Philadelphia and San Jose, because both of them are probably a failed entity this season. You know, both of them might struggle to make the playoffs. I think San Jose is probably out. Philadelphia might struggle to play in. And both teams went out and bought all these crazy, you know, we're doing our preseason podcast regarding those teams. They went out and they bought all these crazy Mexicans and French and players in, and what, you know, where did they give them, right? You know, arguably Jan and McLaughlin and And Hernandez could have been playing it with the Union, and arguably the Union would be in the exact same place they're in now, right? So it just goes back to my original point where I think it's, you know, a fault of the MLS. But honestly, I think eventually, as soccer develops in North America, like we had in the NBA, in the NHL with the WHL and the NHL, and what we had in NFL with USFL and the NFL, is you can have a competitive league, right? You can have a league that basically says there's enough of a market in soccer, you know, we're no longer going to be MLS's, you know, little sister, we're going to go and compete with MLS. And arguably, I think if the scouting was done properly in that league, they could probably create a competitive product. And if they create a competitive product, they could probably create a competitive league.
I think we'll end the pod here for now, but let us know your thoughts. You can tweet us directly at Kamal Hamilton and at ENB Sports. Hop onto the Gaffron Hooligan Facebook page. Check out the War Room Sports Podcast Network and FatsRadio.com. I think that's all the places that we're on. We're on a few different places. But, yeah, so check out all of us there on the Facebook page and everything. And before we go, you can also check out our other brands of podcasts within the RNO family. Eastside Stand-Up with Ian Clark has you covered for all things TFC. Steve Botcher provides the RNO interview series with key figures within the game. The boys at From the Black Hole, Rob, Jeff, and Lars, bring their unique style of coverage to Canadian soccer. You have Ours is the Fury podcast on Ottawa Fury and NASL, and the Footy Roundup, I guess, rounding up European soccer and also touching on MLS a little bit. But until next time, guys, cheers.
Sure.